Hare Krishna. Welcome back to our Nectar Instruction course. We are discussing currently mantra, text 2 here. So we discussed the first two parts of this verse, Atyahara and Prayasa. Now we'll discuss the remaining parts. So here we have the slide which now we're going to discuss. Prajalba, Niyamagraha, Janasangha and Laulya. So Prajalba. Prajalba, Jalpa means talk. Prajalpa means useless talk. Prajalpa. So the point is not that we have to become silent, but we have to know what is the most productive talk for us as spiritualists. So we may wonder what is the relationship between the first part and the second part. That means the first verse talked about certain aspects which a person has to give up. And now this verse is talking about some other aspects which are not can harm us also spiritually. So is there a relationship? In one sense, Vacho Vega may seem very similar to Prajalba. And here Prabhupada also gives the example of a frog, which also seems similar. So essentially, they may be similar, but the frame of analysis is different. The first is talking from the perspective of the body, the mind, the urges, which can harm a person on the spiritual path. But the focus there is on the bodily urges. Here the focus is more from the spiritual perspective. Now if we look at the previous verse, essentially controlling those vegas is important for all transcendentalists. It's a generic description that is given. Whereas here when it is described, it is from a devotional perspective that these six activities will harm the bhakti lata beach. Shadbhir bhakti vinashyati. So of course there can be coincidences. There are certain things which can be materially harmful and spiritually harmful also. For example, intoxication. You know, it is spiritually detrimental, it is materially also detrimental. Or we can have also nowadays eating non-vegetarian food is being increasingly recognized to be materially also unhealthy. And you know, spiritually it is extremely undesirable. So there can be overlaps. But then the perspectives are different. From the material perspective, some people may say certain things are good. But from the spiritual perspective, they may not necessarily be good. So the point here is that there can be overlap, but the focus in both the analysis is different. That here the focus is on the bhakti and what is anukul to bhakti and what is pratikul to bhakti. So let us look at prajalpa. So I said jalpa means speech. Prajalpa means actually speech that is harmful, that is detrimental. So it is similar to Vacho Vega. Now it's interesting that Bhishma Pitamaha in his instructions talks about speech to Yudhishthir. That is one of the longest sections in the whole Mahabharata. Just like there are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, similarly there are 18 parvas in the Mahabharata. And the longest among the parvas is there's a Bhishma Parma, which at the start of the war takes place, where long description is there. Similarly, the long conversations, if we see, one long conversation is the conversation between Dharma and Yudhishthir. Very long conversation. Similarly, the long conversation between Yudhishthir and Bhishma. So there, when Bhishma is instructing Yudhishthir in Rajadharma, he explains that how should a person speak? And he gives a hierarchy. So he says, this is an adaptation of what he's speaking for our analysis. So he says that the best is the speech about the Lord, the glorification of the Lord. Then he says this pleasing speech. Then he says this truthful speech. Then below that he says this useless speech. And then is blasphemous speech. So there's five ways of analyzing. Like that there can be different ways. But here, speak about the absolute truth, speech, sweet speech, truthful speech, useless speech and blasphemous speech. So anything that is blasphemous, anything that is useless, that will all come under Prachalva. Now it's interesting that he places sweet speech above truthful speech. Now Krishna also, when he's describing in the Bhagavad Gita in the 17th chapter, he talks about austerity of speech.
And there he says, Anudvegakaram Vakyam Satyam Priyahitam Chayat Swadhyaya Besanam Jaiva Vanmayam Tapa Uchyate. So he describes Anudvegakaram Vakyam Anudvegakaram, that Vakya which does not agitate others. Satyam Priyahitam Chayat, that which is truthful, that which is pleasing, that which is beneficial. And then Swadhyaya Besanam Jaiva, reciting of the Vedic scriptures. All these are Vanmayam Tapa Uchyate. They are austerities of the speech. So this means that all these are austerities by which one can spiritualize one's speaking power. By doing these activities, our speaking power will not get dissipated, but we'll have the opportunity to utilize it more and more for Krishna's sake. So in general, those speeches which are detrimental to our spiritual life, those we should avoid. Now, what are the speeches that are detrimental? So certainly blasphemous speech is detrimental. So we discussed earlier about Vacho Vegam, where people want to talk about all sorts of hundreds of things. There are so many channels, there are so many chat rooms, there are so many messaging systems, and there is so much unproductive talk that is happening. But in this context, because the focus is on bhakti, we'll talk something more specific here. We'll talk about how devotees can engage in talks that can be detrimental to one's bhakti. So these can be of two broad categories. One is those which are blasphemous and those which are rumor based. See, blasphemous means that there is speaking bad about devotees, and the whole purpose is to malign the devotee by that. Now the important point is not that whether it is true or false. If the intention is to malign a devotee, that can be offensive to our spiritual life. It can be very injurious, very, very injurious. So it is a mad elephant offense coming, and it can destroy our bhakti lata beach. So there is beyond that rumor-based speech. Rumor-based speech means we hear. See, as devotees, we have certain moral standards all of us are expected to follow. And anybody can have difficulties of following the moral standards. Now, when somebody has some difficulties and somebody falls at that time, then they need our help. At the very least, we can offer them our prayers. If we can't offer any practical help to them, they need help from us. Now, imagine if a warrior is going on a war field and that warrior gets wounded. And then when the person is wounded, the person should be sent to the hospital. But imagine if a warrior is wounded and because of that, because of getting wounded in the war, the warrior is sent to a jail. What happens? Now, if we send to the jail those who need the hospital, are we being compassionate? Actually, we are being violent in a way. So, all devotees, no matter how externally in a position advanced they may be, they all have their challenges in the practice of spiritual life. And if somebody has some difficulties, somebody has some slips, some falls, then they need the hospital. And there are very few devotees who actually come with the intention to be hypocritical. Generally, Vaishnava Prabhupada's mercy, we have such high standards that if a person just wants to enjoy, then the material world offers better prospects for enjoyment than the disciplines of Krishna consciousness and the subsequent enjoyment that the person may get after following those disciplines. So, there are people who try to practice, but for whatever reasons, they fall. Now, when they fall, if we can help them, that's well and good. If we can't help them, then best is not to talk about it. Because what are we doing by it? Are we going to make any spiritual advancement by talking about the fall of some devotee? No, we are not going to make it. Only if it is done in a way of trying to learn what was wrong in it, then maybe something can be learned. But even then, especially when an event has happened, then after that, the emotional impact of the event is far greater than the rational analysis. And so we can't learn much. If some devotee has had some problem, okay, at the very least, we should not be a part of the rumor mongering group that goes around talking about those things. If somebody has that problem, yes, it's between that person and Krishna. I mean, that person and the authority over there, whoever it is. Now, I have not come to Krishna consciousness movement to gossip about people. So we have to understand that there will be many devotees, unfortunately, who succumb to this tendency of gossiping. You know, this person, this happened, and you know, that person, that happened, that person, that happened. Now, it may have happened, and now, actually, technology has made has given this gossip a international reach and flavor. Now, one person can write something, and one person posts a mail, and it goes to thousands of people all over the world. And most of these people have no way to confirm. So, generally, if we hear something negative about someone, that just sticks in the mind. It may stay for a long time in our mind. So, this simply contaminates our consciousness and others' consciousness. So, we have come to Krishna consciousness movement for a purpose. And that purpose is to become Krishna conscious. So, once we keep that goal in mind, then it becomes very clear what we should talk with other devotees. Now, we shouldn't assume that senior devotees are perfect, even if they fall, or when they talk about other devotees who have fallen. Now, our seniors may succumb to this. If that is happening, then we should at that time move away from there. So now, sometimes for an educational purpose or for a protectional purpose, some authorities may have to speak about somebody. That is different. That is a situation where a person is authorized, and that time also how one should speak is in a way that doesn't make it difficult for that devotee to become integrated, to continue on in devotional service. There was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada who was a sannyasi, a dynamic leader, but somehow he had some difficulties, he fell. And then he felt that now I have fallen from the standards. So he gave up his sannyas, and his sannyas danda he sent by a courier back to Srila Prabhupada. And there was a Prabhupada servant over there who received all of Prabhupada's letters. And when he read the letter and he saw that, and he spread the news among everyone. You know, what happened to this person? What happened to this person? What happened to this person? And then this just spread in the whole devotee community. And when Prabhupada came to know about it, Prabhupada was more angry with the devotee who spread the news about another devotee's problems than the devotee who had the problems. Prabhupada told him, now you have made it almost impossible for him to come back to the association of devotees. Now we may say, no, no, if that person has fallen, then why should that person have a false ego? You can come and be humble. No, there is the concept of false ego is one thing, but all of us are human beings. And there has to be some basic human sensitivity. No, what are the human needs of a person? We should not snub them by calling them as egoistic needs. Everybody needs, in a community, everybody needs a basic level of respect. If our dirty linen, if the dirty things in our house are displayed for the whole world to see, we'll feel bad. So now this is not to say that we sweep all the problems that anybody has under the carpet and we pretend that everything is nice. That is not the point. You know, if somebody has problems, we have standards to follow. Those who can't follow the standards, you know, they have to make some changes, whatever the changes may be. But the point is that just by talking about these things to others, we do not help anyone. We do not help ourselves. We do not help others. And we even hurt those people who are having those problems. So this is a very common form of prajalba that is becoming more and more increasing. And now with the internet available, and there are many devotees who have grievances with their local authorities, with the ISKCON, GBC, or whatever. And then the way they vent out their grievances is by opening websites and sending mails in which they tell people that this is wrong, that is wrong, that is wrong, and this person did this and that person did that. One thing we have to understand that, you know, I came to Krishna consciousness movement to become Krishna conscious. And I have seen in my life that if I practice Krishna consciousness, I do become purified. If I chant Hare Krishna, if I associate with devotees, then my lust decreases, my greed decreases, my anger decreases, my attraction to Krishna increases. So if we practice the process of Krishna consciousness with even a basic level of sincerity and diligence, we will see that this process works. So if the process is working for me, then let it work and let me help it work for others also. If some people have some difficulties, yes, it's between them and Krishna, they will deal with it. Just talking about the problems of devotees doesn't really lead to any good towards anyone. Now, of course, there are two different issues here. Both of them have to be balanced. One is that we want to have proper standards, and those who cannot stick to the standards, you know, we cannot let them compromise the standards. But at the same time, we also want to be compassionate, and we want to encourage everyone in the practice of devotional service. So those who are leaders, it is their responsibility that if somebody has a problem, how to deal with that problem in a way that is sensitive. At the same time, that is also faithful to the tradition and sympathetic to the person. This is a balance which is not easy to achieve. But certainly talking behind the back about what happened to anyone, there are few things which hurt the whole community's spiritual atmosphere as much as this. So the Krishna consciousness movement is very big, and because there are different people from different parts of the world who have come with different conditioning, something will always be happening somewhere in the movement. So, you know, we have come here to become conscious of Krishna. We have not come here to become conscious of the faults of different people in different parts of the world. Ultimately, Krishna is like a Kalpataru. Kalpataru means desire tree. What we want from Krishna, we'll get from Krishna. And to a large extent, that applies to ISKCON also. When we come to ISKCON, what we want, we'll get from ISKCON. Now, if I come to ISKCON to become proud, then I can get so much of my pride fulfilled. You know, in which organization you go, and as soon as you enter, people offer obeisances to you. You know, I just have to stay around for a few years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and what happens? I become a senior devotee. People start offering obeisances to me. So if I want to become proud, I want pride, I can get more pride than other places. If I want power, you know, the way devotees submit to their authorities, you know, even companies, bosses, subordinates may not submit like that at times. So I may get that also. If I want wealth, Krishna can give that to me. You know, if I get into fundraising, Krishna can empower me, and I'll have so much money in my hands. I'm meant to use it for Krishna's service, but I can misappropriate it if I want. But if I come for wealth, I'll get wealth. So just as somebody can get respect, somebody can get power, somebody can get wealth, you know, if I want controversy, I'll get more controversy in ISKCON than in the material world also, rest of the material world. So if my kalpa is controversy, then ISKCON will be my controversy kalpataru. If my desire controversy, Krishna, ISKCON will give me so many controversies. Here this happened, here that happened, there that happened. And then I will be in the Krishna conscious movement, but I will be controversy conscious, not Krishna conscious. And I will be defeating the purpose for which I came here. So therefore, prajalpa means that when we talk about things that are not anukul for our bhakti, that do not nourish our bhakti lata bij, then they, now we are talking not about material subject matters. We discussed earlier about how whatever material subject matters are required for our functioning in life and in the broader society, we have to discuss them. We don't get too much caught into them, but we discuss them at a basic level. Now we are talking about within devotee community. When we come, there is so much Krishna Katha we can discuss. Now we hear classes, we read books, and we can discuss what we have heard or read, and we can deepen our mutual understanding, and we can discuss about our services and how we can improve our services. So that way we don't have to talk about all these things. And generally, if we have to talk for some reason or the other, then it is best to be very prayerful and very cautious. That means if some devotee has had some problems and somebody asks us about it and we have to tell about it, then we should tell it in a give proper background, tell in a proper consciousness, and help that devotee to understand it properly. Otherwise, we can injure that devotee's devotion, we may injure our devotion, and we pollute the whole atmosphere of the devotee community. So prajalpa can just sap away our spiritual energy. Now, what does it mean, sap away our spiritual energy? No, the spiritual energy is not some fluid that flows through the body. The spiritual energy is basically the enthusiasm of practicing devotional service. But when we find that actually people are that this person has that problem, that person has that problem, that person has that problem, and you just talk about all these things with the different people, then all these things sap away our spiritual energy. And actually speaking, we shouldn't think this is something new. As long as the material world is there, there is the possibility of having difficulties. There is the possibility of having falls. So it is nothing new. Srila Prabhupada said that, don't be surprised at who stays. Don't be surprised at who falls. Be surprised at who stays. Krishna also says, manushyanam sahasreshu. And not only that, if you look at post Chaitanya Mahaprabhu times, so I gave a series of lectures on history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So I talked about pre-Chaitanya Vaishnavism, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's times, and post-Chaitanya Vaishnavism, pre-Bhaktivinoda Thakur Vaishnavism, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur's times, Bhaktisanjaya Thakur times, Srila Prabhupada's times, and post-Prabhupada ISKCON times. So if we look at it throughout the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there have been difficulties. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Advaita Acharya's sons became Mayavadis. Now Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu. And he is an intimate associate of the Lord, he is an incarnation of the Lord, and his own son became Mayavadi. Now we may say, how is that possible? How is that possible? The soul has free will. And the soul can use free will in whatever way that free will wants. Now of course, their Mayavad was peculiar version. They thought that, they had the whole idea that Advaita Acharya himself is Krishna in all senses. And not only that, their idea was that, because Advaita Acharya called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended, so their idea was that Advaita Acharya is greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because by his command, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended. And their idea was Advaita Acharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu both are God, but Advaita Acharya is a greater God. So Advaita Acharya himself was upset by this notion. And so were other people, other Vaishnavas at that time. So this is what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is calling as Mayavad. So now, the point is, so people having difficulties and even big people having difficulties is not new. It has happened throughout. And the process is potent. The process is, those who want to make it work, those who want to get purified, they will get purified. But those who are careless in following the process, they will have difficulties. And those who want to talk about others having difficulty, they can keep talking about it. So, a very good analogy for understanding this is the disease metaphor. The disease metaphor means, this whole world is like an epidemic, afflicted area. And the germs that are causing that epidemic are lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. Especially lust, greed, even anger is there, pride is there. But these are the germs that are there. And actually these germs can affect anyone. Now Krishna conscious process offers us immunity. It raises our immune strength. And as we discussed in the issue of Nishad, apap, viddham and shuddham. Prabhupada uses the words that they are Krishna, the remembrance of Krishna and Krishna himself is prophylactic and antiseptic. It prevents infection and cures infection. So that's Krishna. But if there is an infected area, then anybody can get the infection. If they get the infection, they have to take the precautions to prevent the infection, or if they get the infection, immediately they have to take the medication, then they will get cured. If somebody doesn't take precautions, somebody doesn't take medication, what is going to happen? That person is going to get infected. Now who can get infected? You know, a new compounder who has just joined the hospital where the epidemic afflicted people are there, that person can get infected. And a top surgeon who has won, say, the Bharat Ratna Award for dying of 10,000 surgeries and has saved the life of lakhs of people, that person can get infected. So, as far as the germs are concerned, the germs are there. And if one is neglectful of the vaccination or the medication, then anybody can get infected, and even a top doctor can get infected mortally, can fatally, the person can die also. So, now of course, the epidemic is capable of being countered. Those who take precautions, they'll counter it. Now the disease metaphor has a limitation in the sense that the germs come without our invitation. Whereas with lust, anger, greed, often we we act actively to get them into us. You know, when we become lusty, we provoke ourselves to imagine, to imagine things, and then we succumb to lust or we succumb to greed. So in that sense, our free will's misuse is also involved. So when a person becomes sick, we don't consider that person to be morally responsible for the sickness. The person is a victim of sickness. Whereas when a person falls, we consider that person morally responsible because we all have free will and we are expected to follow certain moral standards. So it's a moral lapse, no doubt. That is true. So there is a difference between infection and this example. But the point here is the universality, that anybody can have difficulties. And the potency of the Krishna conscious process is not by the fact that anybody can stay immune if that no matter what the person does. The potency of the process is that no matter who the person is, if that person adopts the process, then that person remains immune. And if that person neglects the process, that person's immunity is lost. So that person may be a top person or a bottom person. Then if that person neglects being Krishna conscious, then infection will come. Krishna Surya Sama Maha Maya Hai Andhakar Yaha Krishna Tahar Nahi Maya Radhikar. So where there is Krishna, there cannot be Maya. But the converse is also true. Where there is no Krishna, where there is no light, darkness will be there. The darkness will inevitably creep in, and then it will pervade. So tamastadasid ghanam gabhiram yastasya pare abhirajate vibhu. So Gajendra prays in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in 3rd chapter, I think verse 6, he says that, my dear Lord, when everything is destroyed in this world, tamastadasid ghanam gabhiram, there is this complete darkness. There is such darkness that one cannot see anything. Ghanam gabhiram, complete pitch darkness. Yastasya raje. So one is beyond you stay effulgent, my Lord. You are the source of light and you give illumination. So he's referring to the time when the whole universe is destroyed and everything is dark in the area of material existence. But still the transcendental abode is effulgent. And there, yastasya pare abhivirajate vibhu. The Lord splendorously resides over there. So similarly, in this world, this is the world of Maya, so there is darkness. But beyond the darkness, Krishna is there. Those who turn towards Krishna, they see light. Those who turn towards Maya, they see darkness. Not only do we see, we get sucked into the darkness, or we get attracted towards the light. So those who have failed to practice the process of Krishna consciousness, they have fallen. But when we also talk about how they have fallen, what are we doing? In many ways, we are simply actually doing nothing more than being Krishna unconscious. And in a way, we may not fall down grossly at that time by talking such things, but we are being Krishna unconscious. So, Prachalpa, how do we avoid that? We have to see what are the subjects that nourish me in devotional service. And I talk those things. And I find that devotee association which helps me to discuss these things. If there are other devotees who talk about certain things which damage my faith, then I offer them my respects from a distance and I move away from there. There's no point in talking about controversies. Now, for educational purpose, if I have heard something from somewhere, if I have a chance to read something on the net, then I can go and ask some responsible senior devotee, what happened? I heard that this has happened. What has exactly happened? Can you help me understand this? So, we can get these things resolved by asking that way. But they will provide some answer. And also we have to be careful whom we ask about these things. Because some devotees may just don't talk about these things. These things keep happening. And they may not give a responsible answer. So we have to know also whom we should ask this sort of question. I'll get answer. And the important point is that even if somebody falls, that doesn't prove that the process is wrong. In fact, conversely, we could say that the fall of that person also proves the truth of the process. The person may be so big that if the person is not Krishna conscious, that person will also have difficulties. So if I am clear for what I have come to the devotee association, then I will not succumb to Prachalva. So, to summarize this point about Prachalva, I have to be clear, my objective is to become Krishna conscious. And the topics that help me to become Krishna conscious, I discuss those topics. Those topics don't help me to become Krishna conscious, I avoid them. And if I have some doubts about what happened to someone, things like that, then we discuss with those particular devotees who can give us answers and move forward, get the answers. But if you don't get the answers, then there's no point in discussing these things with uninformed people, trying to get some tidbits of information. They will not be tidbits of information, they will be tidbits of poison for us. We'll hear a little bit and that will spark our imagination negative way further. We'll hear a little bit there, it will spark our imagination further. So, it is so unfortunate that we come to the society of Krishna consciousness and then we forget that we have come for being Krishna conscious. And we become conscious of so many other things. We are clear about the goal for which we have come, then we will find that Krishna and ISKCON are like Kalpataru. If we come here to be Krishna conscious, we will get Krishna consciousness. We will find the devotee association where pure Krishna consciousness is being discussed. There may not be many devotees, but in every temple, every community, there are devotees who are seriously Krishna conscious, and we can associate with them and grow in their association. So Prajalpa, now I have talked more from, you can read Srila Prabhupada's purport over here, I focused more on the current situation in which you find ourselves, so I elaborated on that based on what Srila Prabhupada has given us purport. Now let us look at Jalbo Niyamagraha. So Niyamagraha means to follow the rules and regulations. Niyam is rule. Agraha means to neglect. And Agraha is to insist on, but without understanding the purpose. So here is the defining metaphor for this analysis. See, rules are like roads. Principles are like compass. Rules are like roads. Principles are like compass. So, generally speaking, the rules are the best way to follow the principles. Just like if I want to go to the north, a compass is showing the destination, where this is north side, and then I find a road to go in that direction. Then the road, if it's going with north, then that is the best way to go in the northern direction. So, to give an example of what we mean by a rule and a principle, what is the difference between the two? So, the Vishnu Puran says that Smartavya Satatam Vishnu Vismartavya Najata Chit Skarva Vidhi Nishedasur Etayor Eva Kinkaram. That all rules and regulations are subordinate to this one principle. Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So this is the rule. Now, is this the rule or is this the principle? This is the principle. So this principle is always remember Krishna. Now what is the rule? Srila Prabhupada has given us the rule in ISKCON that chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. This is the rule. Now chanting 16 rounds, Prabhupada says, on beads, audibly. That is a... not in the mind, but audibly. That is the rule. Now, let's consider some situations. Suppose I am going north. To go north, is my compass is pointing in the direction. There is a road. But there is a landslide. And the road is blocked. Then what do I do? Then, I have to... If I decide I single-handedly will try to remove the whole landslide. And then I will move. And I will be stuck there for the rest of my life. What I do is, okay, I look around, find some other road, or I may even have to go cross-country at that time. But then I make sure that I move towards the destination. Similarly, suppose somebody develops a serious thought problem, by which that person just doesn't have the energy to speak. And just speaking one round, and I exhaust the person so much, that after that person can't do anything. So then that person may be told, that person has to consult some senior devotees, okay, you don't have to chant loudly. You can chant softly. You can chant upangshu. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So this is just an adjustment. Rule is chant loudly, but in that situation, the person can chant loudly. Suppose somebody becomes dumb because of some problem. What will that person do? Is it that if the person is initiated and can't chant 16 rounds now, is that person breaking the initiation vow? No, the person can chant in the mind. So in that situation, there can be exceptions. So the rule and the principle, they are both important, but the principle is more important than the rule. The rule will vary depending on time, place, circumstance. So just like a temple is a place, what is the principle of having a temple? Temple is a place where we can glorify the Lord and share the glories of the Lord with others. So Srila Prabhupada wrote in the mission of ISKCON, among the seven principles of ISKCON, he said, to build a place dedicated to the Supreme Lord. Build places dedicated to the Supreme Lord. So now, traditionally in India, there are strict rules for how temples are to be made. There has to be a shikhar on top, and the deities have to be in a particular direction. And all these different rules are there. Now they are important, because they all contribute to creating a spiritually potent atmosphere over there. But they are not of paramount importance. When Srila Prabhupada made storefronts into temples, but they were just storefronts over there. So there was no chance of, it was just a part of an already constructed building. There's no chance of having any kind of a tower on top of it. Nor was there a possibility to necessarily have the deities in the direction facing east, whatever. So the idea of the deities direction facing east is that when sun god rises, sun god offers obeisances to the Lord, and the Lord sees the sun god and blesses the sun god. That's how the day starts, with the auspicious. The sun gets the darshan of the Lord, and the Lord gets the darshan. Lord is pleased by seeing the rising sun. There are multiple reasons. This is one of the reasons. So the point is, there are rules, but those rules are not inflexible. So Srila Prabhupada was not a stickler for this kind of rules. He adjusted things. You know, storefront is a place primarily where glorification of the Lord can happen very accessibly for those who are interested. The hippies were interested, and they would not come uptown in New York or San Francisco or wherever. They were living in downtown, and the storefront was a place where they could easily come along. So Prabhupada invited them there and got them all to glorify Krishna. And they glorified Krishna wonderfully over there. So Niyamagraha would mean, we see such temples where such vibrant glorification of the Lord is happening, and one says, what is this? The deities are not in this direction. This is not like this, that is not like that. So what are we doing over there? We are insisting on rules without understanding the purpose. So Niyamagraha can be very detrimental, because we become judgmental about others without understanding the facts of the situation. But what are the facts about the situation? So different places. Desha Kala Vibhaga Vet. This phrase comes twice in the Bhagavatam. In significant places. First is, it comes in the Bhishma Pitama section, where Bhishma Pitama is an arrow bed and all these great sages come. So now normally when sages come to a king's palace, the sages are worshipable for the king, and the king is expected to offer obeisances, because Bhishma Pitama was so weak, he couldn't offer obeisances at that time. So what happened? It is said that because he was dharmagya, he knew the principles of dharma, so he offered obeisance mentally, and the sages also understood and accepted. Similarly, when Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest, you know, he was supposed to do worship of the Supreme Lord, but because he was alone in the forest, he could not have proper deities. So he improvised based on situation, and that was accepted. And Prabhupada, in the purports, relevant related purports, he explains that actually things have to be adjusted according to time, place, circumstance, and the Acharya knows how to adjust these things. So that is what is being done over here. Why Srila Prabhupada, when he is building temples in this particular way? So Niyamagraha, in terms of insistence on the letter of the rules without understanding the principle, can be very detrimental. And that is what has happened in traditional culture. The Brahmanas, they claim superiority based on birth. Now respecting Brahmanas is a very, very important part of Vedic culture. Vitally important, because the Brahmanas are connected with Krishna in the sense that Brahmajanati iti Brahmana, they situate themselves in spiritual culture and spiritual consciousness, they have spiritual knowledge, and they share that spiritual knowledge with the rest of the society. So respecting them is a very important part of Brahmanic culture, of Vedic culture in general. But why do they need to be respected? Because they are connected with Krishna, because they are representing Krishna. But when the Brahmanas insisted it, we deserve respect because we are Brahmanas. And they did not exhibit Brahminical qualities. They neither had Brahminical knowledge, nor did they practice Brahminical culture themselves very strictly. And they demanded respect based on birthrights. So actually, birthright made everything wrong in Vedic culture. The idea that all of one's privileges are determined by birthright, that messed up Vedic culture. So if we see traditionally, in the bhakti tradition, many of the topmost saints have been from non-Brahminical backgrounds. And some of them were from low caste backgrounds, some of them from outside the Varnashram fold also. But they were recognized as saints because of their very exalted respectability in terms of attraction to the Lord, devotion to the Lord, and capacity to share that devotion with others. And when they were doing this, often they faced persecution. Srila Prabhupada also writes about this, that the Brahmins didn't care. In India, so many people were getting converted to different religions. And while they were getting converted, especially the lower caste people, who anyway felt neglected, they were getting converted. And the Brahmins said, anyway, they are lower caste people, they use this. If they want to get converted, let them get converted. So it is the Brahmana's responsibility to share spiritual knowledge. It is not that the Brahmana is meant to sit in the ivory tower, which is constructed by everyone else, using their charity and their respect. And the Brahmana sits enjoying the respect of everyone. No, Brahmana is supposed to be active. And the Brahmana is lazy in the sense that it's not doing the Brahminical duty. Prabhupada says that the Brahmana is supposed to take food, but along that it's supposed to give knowledge also. The Brahmana simply takes food and doesn't give knowledge. And that is an irresponsible Brahmana. So as devotees, how can we do Niyamagraha? Well, we're looking at the first part now. I mean, insisting on the letter of the law without understanding its spirit. So there are many ways in which we can do it. One is by imposing on others things without understanding their time, place, circumstance. Now, we have been, say, brought up in Krishna consciousness in a particular way. So for example, now we have the Bhagavatam. So can we mark on the Bhagavatam? Can we underline the Bhagavatam? Can we underline Prabhupada's books? There are two different views among the devotees. Some devotees say that the Bhagavatam is like a deity. Every word is transcendental. What do you need to underline anything for that? So somebody says, no, you cannot do it. And there are other devotees who say, actually, yes, the Brahman, Bhagavatam is like a deity, but it's so vast also. I need to read it, I need to remember it, I need to recollect it. And if I have something underlined, I have something marked, it makes everything much more accessible for me. Therefore, I want to mark it. Should I do it or should I not do it? Now, those one set of devotees, these are like deities. You cannot mark them. How can you mark the deities? Another group says that, these are deities, but we are not marking the deities, we are decorating the deities. Now, who is right? There is no absolute standard of rightness over here. Some devotees may feel this way, some devotees may feel that way. And there are matters of principle and there are matters of preference. When we make matters of preference as absolute, then we become fanatical. What does it mean, matters of preference? This is a matter of preference. Whether I mark the Bhagavatam or I don't mark the Bhagavatam, this is a matter of preference. And there is a lot of, in the Mahabharata, Krishna tells Arjuna, nahi sarvatra vidhiyate. There is not a rule for everything. There are many things which one has to decide based on one's individual discretion. So Krishna has given us intelligence and we get the intelligence from Guru Sadhu Shastra, and based on that we have to make our decisions. So when we make matters of preference into as absolute and as inflexible as matters of principle, then we become fanatics. So there can be many like this with respect to matters of preference. For example, now with respect to the temple deities. So now, of course, ISKCON is having certain standards, and all temples follow those standards with respect to deity worship. You know how to move the chamar, how to move the aarti paraphernalia, and things like that. But if somebody comes to a temple and thinks, in my temple this was done like that, in your temple it is done like that, what is this? You don't know how to do things. Things can be different in time, place, circumstance. The important point is that the deities are there, the Lord is there, and the Lord is being worshipped. So, of course, we may want standardization over the institution, and if we have the authority to standardize, and if we have been given the authorization to do that, then we can do that in a sensitive way. But beyond that, if we make matters of preference into matters of absolute imposition, then we become fanatical. So, for example, there were Gurukuls, and Prabhupada then asked that, okay, in the Gurukuls, Prabhupada's children are there, how much food should they eat? Prabhupada said, oh, you can, the children are small, how much they can eat? You can give them 3 chapatis, something like that. And then some devotees made into a rule, children, 3 chapatis, you know, not 1 chapati more. Prabhupada said 3 chapatis. So different children are different, they have different levels of activity, they have different sizes of build. And now they need more food, he said, oh, 3 chapatis, otherwise, atyahar you are doing. This is silly, different people have different diets. So we cannot absolutize things like this. There are matters of principle and matters of preference. So when we rigidly impose things on people, not understanding the changing time, place, circumstance, then we make a mess of things. See, every tradition has a central core and a periphery. The core has to be unchanging, but the periphery has to change. The periphery has to change, otherwise the tradition cannot survive. And Srila Prabhupada in that matter was remarkably flexible. The way he adapted Krishna consciousness, we have to be adept. Adept means expert. Adept to know what to adopt and what to adapt. What to adopt means take it as it is and present it as it is. And what to adapt. What to present according to time, place, circumstance. Now if you look at just the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, there are so many things that Srila Prabhupada did which were distinctively different from the way Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur functioned. So, Srila Prabhupada, even when he went to the West, he always wore traditional dress, he wore dhoti kurta. But Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, many times, even when he was in India, he would wear Western dress, you know, he would wear shirt pants sometimes. And what to speak of in India, in capital cities like Calcutta, in major cities like Calcutta, Western cities, he would sometimes wear shirt pants and shoes and everything, and he would go to Radhakund in that. So now, does that mean that Prabhupada was not following Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur? Obviously not. These are externals. No, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur knew that in that particular atmosphere, that was the best way he could command respect of people. You know, when people had a particular stereotype notion of sadhus, when they saw that, oh, this person is so modern and this person is still teaching the same siddhanta, then that caught their attention. When Prabhupada went to America, you know, a shirt pant would have just got him to gel with the West and nobody would have noticed also, practically speaking. But his dress was so distinctive and the hippies wanted to do all sort of strange things. So, Prabhupada's dress was radical or extraordinarily attractive for them. And they not only were attracted to the dress, they started adopting that dress also. So, like that we can see that there are many things which Srila Prabhupada did differently. But Srila Prabhupada said, I have not changed anything. What does it mean, I have not changed anything? He has not changed anything in the essential message. The essence remains the same, but the core will always remain the same, but the periphery will have to change because circumstances change. When circumstances change, then presentation has to change accordingly. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, we will not find any elaborate arguments for the existence of God or for the existence of law of karma. Why? Because in the cultural context in which Arjuna is asking questions to Krishna, these are implied truths. But today, when we teach, when we have to say, teach a Bhagavad Gita course, the first thing we have to tell is that God exists, soul exists, karma exists, scriptures are the word of God. And then after all that, each of these will require sometimes one session, more than one session, sometimes a lot of question answers. And then after that, we can go and start talking about Bhagavad Gita. So often, if we see most of the Bhagavad Gita courses that we conduct, what we do is actually just discuss concepts which prepare people to understand Bhagavad Gita. When we start studying Bhakti Shastra, then we'll understand that actually how little we have understood Bhagavad Gita and how much we still have to understand Bhagavad Gita. And that's essential because there is a Bhagavad Gita was spoken in a particular cultural context, and now the cultural context is different. Same way with different situations. We are talking about Acharya. But in our situations also, we cannot impose our own standards on others. Certainly, Prabhupada has given certain standards, and we should follow them faithfully. At the same time, different devotees are in different areas. They are trying their best to preach in accordance to their situation. And without understanding the specifics of that particular situation, if one tries to impose, then it can create a lot of problems. For example, now, say that now normal devotee etiquette is that whenever we see somebody, we offer obeisances. We bow down and offer obeisances. Now, in some parts of the world, there was slavery in the past. And when slavery was there, the idea was that whenever the slave sees the master, the slave has to bow down. So now, when people see devotees bowing down to some senior devotee, if in that culture people get the memory of slaves, now you people, you become slaves when you go into this cult. Who wants to become slaves? So now in that case, to avoid some negative perception, certain things may have to be changed in front of public. So now that is something which Krishna and his advanced devotees will decide. We can't have Niyamagraha with respect to this. Imposing such things without understanding the situation, we can create unnecessary conflict in the devotee community. So with respect to ourselves also, we have to be strict in following the rules. But there is a difference between strictness and fanaticism. And what is the difference? The difference is when we make the matters of preference into a matter of principle. There is adequate room for individual choice. And if we don't recognize that there is room for individual choice within the broad principles of Krishna consciousness, then we become fanatical. And fanaticism can terribly ruin Krishna consciousness for ourselves and for others also. So Srila Prabhupada himself was very understanding on many occasions. Whenever he would talk about Krishna consciousness, you know, the very fact that Srila Prabhupada was able to take in devotees from all over the world and attract them to Krishna's lotus feet, that indicates that he had a potency by which he could adjust things according to time, place, circumstance and present. And gradually he moved them towards the purity, and they did become pure. Thousands of people from all over the world, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, coming through his books, coming through direct, through his lectures, through his followers, they are getting purified. So one is Niyamagraha, fanatical adherence to rules. And the other is Niyamagraha, agraha. Graha means to accept. Agraha means the rules. Yeah, this is not important. Why do you bother about such things? So very often, whenever any rule is difficult for us to follow, we can say, this is impractical, or this is irrelevant, this is unimportant. And we can just dismiss practically most of Krishna consciousness that way. That is also not Krishna consciousness at all. The rules are important and they have to be followed. So, Niyamagraha, whimsically giving up the rules and regulations, is not at all recommended. So, Srila Prabhupada said that actually speaking, you know, the core of Krishna consciousness has to continue. So, we may have different devotees with different levels of commitment. That is fine, but the core has to be clear. So, Niyamagraha would mean that we neglect the rules and regulations because we just find, for some reason, we don't like them or we don't find them convenient. So, we just neglect the rules and regulations. So, Srila Prabhupada was in many ways very broad. At the same time, he was also quite particular about certain things. I discussed yesterday how even when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he preferred Indian cuisine. He taught his Western disciples to learn Indian cooking. And he got them to wear what we could call as Indian dress. It's not Indian dress, it's the dress of the spiritual world. But from the relative typology of this world, it was the Bengali dress or Indian dress, sari and dhoti kurta. And he expected devotees to wear this. And as much as possible, devotees should try to wear this. So now, of course, in today's cultural scenario, people may not be able to wear this when they go to professional jobs. But within the devotee community, as much as possible, one can try to wear a devotee dress. And that way, one will be steady. One will be able to follow the principles nicely. Just rejecting these rules as irrelevant is not good. So some people may say that, you know, ultimately devotion is a matter of the heart. Whether I wear sari or whether I wear jeans, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, if my heart is a devoted, what is the problem? Whether I, what kind of dress I wear, it doesn't matter. Well, certainly devotion is a matter of the heart, but the heart is affected by what is around it. The heart doesn't exist in a vacuum in isolation from everything else. So there are certain dresses which increase our bodily consciousness, and certain dresses which decrease our bodily consciousness, and therefore they are more conducive to Krishna consciousness. So the traditional dresses, the dhoti kurta, the sari, you know, they are simple, they are chaste, and they are conducive to devotional consciousness. On the other hand, there are other kinds of dresses which expose the body, which highlight the body's contours, and they make us as well as others more bodily conscious. So then, yes, it is not a person can wear shorts or jeans or whatever they want to wear, and they can chant Hare Krishna. Nobody, whatever, just because of their dress will be stopped from chanting Hare Krishna. But if somebody wants to be a serious devotee, and serious devotee should wear dresses which are conducive for the growth, which are conducive for spiritual consciousness, for oneself and for others. So now this is, generally speaking, something which we need to follow to realize the benefit. So when we wear a devotional dress, does it affect our consciousness? Yes, it definitely does. Because essentially, the externals affect the internals. Like I explained earlier, our posture affects our emotions. You know, if I lie down back and raise my legs up and point to some Prabhu, I am feeling very humble now. And I am making a mockery. You know, if I sit like this, I cannot be humble. I might be able to stretch myself and feel a little bit humility, but my posture immediately affects my psychology. Just as our posture affects our psychology, similarly our dress affects our psychology. So as much as possible, we try to wear a dress which is conducive to our devotional consciousness. So if we just neglect this, then that doesn't help us, because we simply become bodily conscious more and more. So I answer questions on my website. So one time somebody asked a question that, you say that actually the Western dresses are scanty and they reveal the body, but even the sari reveals the body. You know, in the sari, the whole middle part of the body is revealed. So how is that just? So then I told that actually we shouldn't think Bollywood is our teacher for learning how to wear a sari. You know, people have, what do you mean by sari? They say Bollywood actresses wearing saris and they think this is the way sari is to be worn. So Bollywood is so expert that it can make a dress of chastity into a dress of vulgarity. So actually speaking, there's a Vedic culture, and everything within that culture has a particular purpose. So the purpose, when it is known, then everything will be adapted for that purpose. But if that purpose is not known, if that purpose is neglected or rejected, then everything can be abused. So yes, somebody can be flashy and gaudy, even within with a chaste dress. That is possible. And somebody can be wearing a very flashy and gaudy dress and still be having a very devotional consciousness. But these are exceptions. But the general pattern is certain dresses encourage certain consciousness. So Niyamagraha means rejecting the rules entirely just because one has a particular idea. The rules are not important. The rules are important because they are the best way by which we can follow the principles. Just like I said, going back to the starting example, that there are roads. If I decide that I'll not follow the road and I decide to go cross country, when there is a road, now in the cross country there may be thorns, there may be ditches, there may be streams, there may be rivers, there may be snakes, so all kind of dangers will be there, and I have to go through all those dangers, and all those dangers may not only hurt me, they'll slow me down, and I'll make my journey tougher, slower, and I may not even reach the destination. So the roads are the best way, but at some times the roads may not be the best way. So that exceptions are there, and the exceptions have to be noted down. But in general, we follow the rules. So Niyamagraha, we understand the rules are important, and we understand the principles are more important. And we also understand the rules are normally the best way to follow the principles. But in certain situations, things may have to be adjusted. So generally, this adjustment has to be done very thoughtfully in consultation with senior devotees, according to time, place, circumstance. But in general, we try to follow the rules, and these rules help us to make spiritual advancement. Krishna says that Abhyasa Yogena Tato Maam Ichchaptam Dhananjaya. In the 12th chapter, when he's talking about various levels of bhakti, so then he says 12.8, he's talking about pure devotional service. Then when he says that is not possible, Ath Chittam Samadhatum Na Shaknosi Maistiram Abhyasa Yogena Tato Maam Ichchaptam Dhananjaya. In 12.9, he says that if you follow the rules of Abhyas Yoga, that is, follow the rules of Sadhana Bhakti, then by that what happens? Maam Ichchaptum Dhananjaya. You will get the desire to obtain me. That means our desire for Krishna, our attraction to Krishna will increase. So this is what happens when you follow the Niyamas. By following the rules that the scriptures have given us, our attraction to Krishna increases. And that is the essence of bhakti. So neglecting the rules means our attraction to Krishna will not increase. In fact, it may decrease also. May get distracted, and then that is Shadbir Bhakti Vinashyati. So today we discussed about Niyamagraha, and before that we discussed about Prajalpa. So we'll continue about the other two next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.